So thank you. Today we're going to talk about metals. I guess that's a good summary of the title. But very special metals. And this work was done under the supervision of Sonsik Lee and with collaboration with Anton Ashusingi and Andreas Klief. Anton is also a student at McMaster's. Ashu was a postdoc there. And Andreas, he was a doctorate PhD student at McMaster's. And he was a postdoc at Max Planck, but now he's making money. So as I said, today we're going to talk about effective field theories for metals. And let's start with the ground state of a metal, right? So when interactions are turned off, the ground state of a metal is given by the Fermi C of occupied electronic levels and a boundary region, which is the Fermi surface. I guess I should use this for the person online. when there are no interactions turned on, the Fermi C is a rigid state. So this means that we can label any states near the Fermi surface with the single particle occupation numbers of the electrons, and it will behave as a good quantum number. If we turn interactions on, the Fermi C is no longer rigid, especially the Fermi surface, which is now composed of gapless modes that separate the occupied and unoccupied states. And thanks to the interaction, these gapless modes can fluctuate now. So the Fermi surface is no longer rigid. However, for Fermi liquid theories, remarkably, the excitations near the Fermi surface still have long lifetimes. So this means that we can still use the quasi-particle picture to describe them. Essentially, the width of the spectral function that we use to localize them on momentum space is a sharp distribution that decays faster than the energy as we take the low energy limit. But in general, we encounter theories that in which this is no longer the case. The excited states are not long-lived enough to use this quasi-particle picture, and we call those non-Fermi liquid theories. These usually arise near some quantum critical point where some collective interaction becomes relevant. In this plot here, we are basically plotting the scaling exponent of temperature. In this case, just KB is just a measure of energy, and we're plotting how this energy of certain physical observables scales as we move along the phase diagram here. In this red region, we have the non-Fermi liquid behavior, commonly associated with some linear energy behavior. And in the blue region, we have the most common Fermi liquid behavior given by this quadratic picture. This quantum critical point is usually separating some spontaneous irreversible phase of the lattice, and it introduces two different challenges. The first one is that we are dealing with a strongly coupled problem. Right, here G is the coupling of the collective interaction, and it has some positive scaling dimension, that, which means that if we take the expansion on G, this expansion will eventually diverge. And the second problem, which is a more general one, is that we are required to study the low energy theory of the Fermi surface. We need some framework that takes into account the size of the Fermi surface given by the Fermi momentum here. In other words, since the Fermi surface is an extended object, the low energy content of the theory is given by infinitely many gapless degrees of freedom on the Fermi surface. Let's go to specifics now of the quantum critical point that we're trying to study. And in the 2D antiferromagnetic quantum critical metal, we have an order parameter that is given by the spin fluctuations. And the broken symmetry is the translational symmetry of the lattice from a paramagnetic metal to a metal with antiferromagnetic order. Moreover, this symmetry is also, the broken symmetry is also collinear in the sense that it breaks the spin symmetry from SO3 in space, to O2. Here we can see the Fermi surface, And when the symmetry is broken, gaps open at the edges and the centers of the bands, opening some electron pockets and hole pockets on the Fermi surface. This is a very interesting phase transition, but here we're going to focus only on the critical point, right? The order parameter, the spin fluctuations, are spatially modulated with some ordering vector Q, which is non-zero. And for high TC, this is usually in some screwed up units is pi pi. So it's a non-zero vector. Here, in this red circle represents the surface of the Brillouin zone, this entire Brillouin zone, when it's translated by QIF. And these intersection points are points that interact strongly with the spin fluctuations down to the zero energy level. These are called hotspots. And these hotspots have been treated before in a patch theory, which is called the hotspot theory. Let me expose you the theory very quickly. So this is the action. And the key point is that we are taking patches of size mu, where mu is a floating energy scale that we're going to take to zero. And we take one patch at each hotspot. So here, n is the label of the hotspot from 1 to 8, and sigma labels the spin. K0 is the Matsubara frequency, and the vector k is the two spatial momentum. Psi are the fermion fields, retaining the fundamental representation of SE2. And since we can rescale our momentum freely in these patches, here in the dispersion energy, oh, by the way, the dispersion energy, it gives you the energy away from the hotspot, the dispersion of the energy away from this hotspot. And all spatial momentum is measured relative to the hotspots in this coordinate system, which is attached to one, to the hotspot one. And by C4 or 90 degree rotation symmetry, we can relate it to, we can find the coordinates of these eight hotspots. okay, so the dispersion energy tells me the energy away from the hotspots as a function of momentum. And since we can rescale the momentum as we wish, we can rescale the momentum, we can basically set up the components of the Fermi velocity at the hotspots to fixed values. Here, the component that goes along the vector QIF is set to 1, and the component perpendicular in this coordinate system is set to V. V is called the nesting angle, and it tells you the degree of nesting between the hotspots as it goes to 0. Okay, so in the second line, we have the boson kinetic term with some velocity c. And this is written in the adjoint representation of the spin group of SU2. These are the generators, and this is the canonical fields. And in the third line, we have the Yukawa interaction term, where this n bar basically means that is the hotspot connected through to n through the vector QIF. All momentum from the bosons, the momentum of the bosons is measured relative to the ordering vector QIF, right, where it has zero energy or is in the Fermi surface. This basically tells me that if I have a hot an electron at 4 that absorbs a boson with zero energy, it will go to 1 with momentum k plus q. And as I said, this is a strongly coupled problem. And to deal with it, however, we have a solution. And this solution is the small nesting angle solution. So the dynamics of the boson for the patch theory are found self-consistently in this limit. Here, this double wiggly line is the fully dressed boson propagator. And the straight line are the electrons. And this is basically a self-consistent Schwinger-Dyson equation for the dynamics of the boson. We can expand to leading order in B to order 1 and find this propagator. And the rest of the subleading diagrams, we can sum order by order in V in the nesting angle to find the fixed point of the theory. And it turns out that V flows logarithmically to 0 to a fixed IR fixed point where V is equal 0. Now, this patch theory finds a solution only near the hotspots. So it has some obvious shortcomings, right? So since the patches are small near the hotspots, the first obvious shortcoming is that we're not considering the entire Fermi surface. Since we're not considering the entire Fermi surface, we are not capturing all the momentum-dependent critical properties of the metal. in this, for example, the anomalous dimension of the electrons. Moreover, under the scaling in which the patch theory is invariant, we are not taking into account two-body interactions given by the four Fermi coupling because it's irrelevant by power counting. However, since if we consider the entire Fermi surface, we will have to sum over momentum all the interactions that involve large angle scatterings or large difference of momentum scattering between different points of the Fermi surface. So the breakdown of the patch theory basically is that these inter-patch interactions are not considered, and we not consider the entire Fermi surface. So we cannot take the negative scaling dimension of our couplings as a guide to tell us which operators are irrelevant in the theory or not. So how do we remedy these problems? We have to study the full theory, and the full theory, we have to include all gapless modes near the Fermi surface. and that means that we have to promote oral couplings to coupling functions. So in the patch theory is basically the linearized expansion of the what would be the full theory on the Fermi surface near the hotspots. That's why we have coupling constants there. and we need to call, since we are considering general coupling functions, we need to call certain tools of functional renormalization. However, we still want to describe the theory as a minimally coupled theory. So we recycle the concept of renormalizable field theory as is used in relativistic field theory. And we use minimal coupling to describe the theory. But to determine which operators to keep, which terms of the action to keep, which are relevant or marginal, we cannot use power counting because the Fermi surface is an extended object. Rather, we use a more general, an equivalent but more general approach, which is that, say, we have some observable O, and we keep only the terms in the actions with coupling functions that produce errors in this observable that are decay as a power law in the floating energy scale mu over the cutoff, UV cutoff lambda. That's why we call it a field theoretical functional RG. So I will explain the action in a minute. So because we're basically recycling this concept to minimally couple the theory and then to generalize this, to not use power counting, but to keep these terms in the action, right? So what does this mean? So as I said, if we take the scaling dimension of the four Fermion coupling, say we are considering some process with zero or center of mass momentum k, which center of mass momentum, right, between hotspots 1 and 5. And this is attached to one loop level to another process. Since if we have time reversal symmetry, that means that the loop momentum q implies that if it's on the Fermi surface, it implies immediately that minus q is also on the Fermi surface. However, Q can be anywhere in a patch that is the size of Kf. Kf is a large momentum scale of the order of the size of the Fermi surface. And we have to sum over all these contributions. That means that the effective coupling that we will generate will be the sum of all these Q contributions on this segment of the Fermi surface, right? And the effective coupling will be a marginal one, right? In other words, it will contribute with some logarithmic quantum corrections that will help us to write the the counter terms. So the full theory, we have to promote the couplings to coupling functions. Here, we are now dividing the entire Fermi surface in eight segments, each one containing one hotspot. that's why we can still use N as a label here, and the same coordinate system. Now, VF, is the Fermi velocity that we defined as 1 previously, but this now is a proper coupling with that depends on momentum kn. Kn is the coordinate in the xy system that labels the Fermi surface. In the case of 1, for example, the coordinate is just x here, kx. Now v, the momentum-dependent nesting angle, is a parameter that determines the shape of the Fermi surface relative to the hotspot through the dispersion energy. When En is 0, this is basically the Fermi surface. Now, the Yukawa coupling depends on the initial and final momentum. And we have to include all momentum for fermion interaction, momentum conserving for fermion interactions. Because as we have seen, they do contribute to the low energy theory. So what do we want to do with this action? Well, we want to run it. We want to see what is the flow. And this is a general sketch of what are our goals with this theory. So this is the Fermi liquid fixed point is given by this sketch of the manifold in this area. And since we now have momentum function coupling functions, this space will be infinite dimensional. So we won't be able to see it or visualize it in this way. So we know that in the Fermi liquid manifold, there is a marginally relevant direction, which is the BCS instability, or the BCS superconducting channel, right? And we know that G is a strictly relevant coupling. So we want to analyze is how this evolves as it approaches this non-Fermi liquid manifold in the phase space of the in the space of the phases of the metal, right? How does this interact if it's unstable, and how does it interact with the unstable point as it goes to the superconducting state? So this is the goals, and to basically analyze those goals, we need to find the beta functionals of the theory. So these are functionals now because they depend on functions of the momentum along the Fermi surface. And for small angle scatterings, each restricted to each hotspot, we can find them as just derivatives on the length scale. But for the four fermion coupling, for example, we will have to deal with a large difference in momentum and integration and integral differential equations that basically mix different channels of the four fermion coupling. So the good news is that we can still sum these order by order by finding them order by order in the nesting angle, just as in the hotspot theory. The full beta function is very complicated, but let me just focus on just one channel. Hopefully this will be quickly. Let's say we have a process from hotspot 1 to 5 in the initial state with momentum k and minus k, to hotspot 1 and 5 again with momentums p and minus p, and zero center of mass momentum. L here is the logarithmic length scale, and this minus 1 is just the fact that lambda has scaling dimension minus 1. Z here is the dynamical critical exponent that tells me how the frequency scales with momentum. And now we are able to capture the momentum-dependent anomalous dimension of the Fermi surface that depends on the Yukawa coupling of the spin fluctuations, the Fermi velocity, and k explicitly. So this will be very strong near the hotspots due to the profiles of G and VF. And away from the hotspot, this will decay to zero as some power law, where here lambda is the UV cutoff. Dilatation terms are due to the fact that as we go to lower energies, we have to basically, well, these basically zoom in into the momentum space along the Fermi surface for P and K. Basically, the profile of the momentum-dependent profile of the coupling functions will be stretched out in momentum space as we go to lower energies. The second line, we have the mixing terms. Now, due to the spin fluctuations, different channels will mix in the four fermion coupling. For example, 1 and 5 here is mixed with 4 and 8 through some momentum Q, right? And D will be the mixing matrix that is also dependent on the spin fluctuations and large momentum large momentum differences. These are the, basically the large momentum scatterings on the Fermi surface. So to analyze the flow, we will have to see at momentums the space of couplings. But for now, let us focus only on the four fermion coupling and V, which are where the interesting physics happens. This theory has an interacting fixed point at V equals 0, Vf equal 1, as it's normalized, G equals 0, and lambda equals 0. But the rate of G squared and V is independent of momentum and is of order 1. The dynamical critical exponent is 1, and the anomalous dimension of the boson is also of order 1, which is a manifest of the strongly coupled nature of the problem. Now, this V equals 0 fixed point is a rather fine-tuned fixed point, because in general, theories of this type have a non-zero nesting angle. however, if we consider a non-zero nesting angle, we have to expand our coupling space to include the imaginary or non-Hermitian theories, right? Because lambda flows faster than V. V is the slowest fast flowing coupling in the theory. We can think of the flow of lambda as some runaway flow that is attached to two fixed points in these red lines here for non-Hermitian theories. We cannot look at the entire flow because it's infinite dimensional space thanks to the momentum, but we can take the full energy flow and project it by choosing some basis in the Cooper pair wave functions. This F here represents the initial channel of pairs of electrons with zero center of mass momentum, but individual momentum k, you know, k and minus k on the Fermi surface. And what we want to do is to project onto some channel with these two parameters. Think of them as dials in some momentum space. So epsilon here basically tells me if I reduce epsilon, I include more electrons that are near the hotspot here at zero. So this is momentum relative to the hotspot. And basically, I'm introducing more electrons that are subject to strong interaction with the spin fluctuations. And delta is the opposite. I include more electrons that are away from the hotspot and therefore are not subject to such strong interactions. So if I reduce epsilon, I increase the weight of hot electrons. Hot electrons near the hotspots have a large anomalous dimension, right? So at some critical point, they will approach each other, like here. And at some critical value, they will collapse. And since the real theories, the physical theories are on the real line, that means if you start with some coupling here, the coupling can flow into the superconducting state, or is able to, by traversing a large set of energy scales, like some runaway flow away from these complex fixed points. If the channel is closed, then they cannot flow through that channel. But the point here is that this is just like a projection, right? The fact that these channels exist is an argument enough to say that the metal can flow to the superconducting state through this runaway flow, right? Moreover, if we reduce V, we also close this bottleneck. But V equals zero is a fine-tuned fixed point, so this is never closed. What happens here is that as we reduce V, the flow is slowed down, and the four fermion coupling has to go through more and more energy scales in order to go to the superconducting state. This means that V is what controls not only the normal state, but also the flow to the superconducting state. and actually, we can visualize that by looking at the momentum space at the hotspots through this plot. So this the x-axis is momentum relative to hotspot 1, and this is just the energy scales, omega. And we can see the effect of the non-Fermi liquid physics near the hotspot here. These colors are plotting the exponent with alpha because of the spectrum function as it scales with energy, right? And in this bright line here, we can see that we have the usual non-Fermi liquid behavior, and in the blue line, the Fermi liquid behavior. In fact, we can evidence this if we plot the shape of the Fermi surface as it's renormalized in the low energy limit, and how it's controlled with V, and the weight, the quasi-particle weight of the single particle excitations. The single particle weight is basically a measure of the area of the sharp peak of the spectral distribution, and it goes to zero near the hotspot. So let me quickly summarize. So we're trying to build effective theories for metals here. So I made two different statements. One is general and one is problem dependent. The general one is that in order to expand our treatment of low energy theories for metals, we have to include all gapless modes on the Fermi surface. And we want to do it in a way that is still minimally coupled, but we cannot trust the scaling dimension as a way to keep relevant or marginal interactions on the action. So we rather use this criteria in which we keep only terms that with errors that go to zero as power laws of the floating energy scale. And of course, we include all the gapless modes on the Fermi surface. And the problem, the strongly coupled problem is just something that, unfortunately, is problem dependent, and we just analyze this problem here, but this is a more general framework. And I didn't talk much about superconductivity, just mentioned that it's controlled by V as well. But here the interest is kind of obvious, right? From particle accelerators to, you know, transportation and storage of data. Here we can see a timeline of superconducting discoveries. There's a lot here, but I can point you out that these points, the green circles, are the usual BCS-driven superconductors. And only recently we've been finding some at high temperatures, but materials which are described by this non-Fermi liquid fixed point are more consistently found above the critical temperature for liquid nitrogen. So what we're missing is the theoretical framework, how to understand them. And this is why we are trying to introduce this field theoretical functionality to describe these kinds of metals. Thank you. And if you have any questions. We're right on time.
Any questions?
So you mentioned that you decided the perturbation efficiency equation, so do you use one of those equations and just use the expansion scheme that you described, or did you develop
a
new RG equation? If yes, how does it differ from, for example, the potential?
So we're not using Wetteridge equation, what we're doing is we're still use computing quantum corrections, but now there are crossover scales that depend on momentum. So the scheme now is that we expand, not on the coupling, of course, but on the nesting angle. So that nesting angle, if we want to compare with Wetteridge equation, the nesting angle will be our truncation scheme, right? Right? And if we want to still compare with Wetteridge equation, our mass operator, our large mass operator, will be just still the quantum corrections. The key point is that now we find different scales that depend on momentum, and they act as crossovers where we can determine where the strong interactions are turned off when compared with the floating energy scale, right? So it's pretty much still using an expansion in diagrams, but this time they are organized on the nesting angle. So it's kind of like a slow Fermi velocity expansion, right?
Well, thank you again.